Hello and welcome to Caregiver Conversations, the podcast that centers the stories, strategies, and strength behind caregiving. I'm your host, Christy King, Executive Director of the Southeast Michigan Senior Regional Collaborative.
And I'm your co-host, Antonia Harbin-Lamb. Each episode, we uplift the voices of caregivers and experts who help us better understand the realities of caregiving and the systems that support or challenge it.
Yes. And today we're honored to welcome Dr. Marilyn French Hubbard. Dr. Hubbard is a retired senior vice president from Henry Ford Health System, president of Healthy, Wealthy, and Wise Change Agents, founder of the National Association of Black Women Entrepreneurs, and author of Sisters Are Cashing In. She's also a family caregiver, mother, and grandmother.
Dr. Hubbard brings both professional expertise and lived experience to this conversation, and we're excited to have her join us today. Welcome, Dr. Hubbard.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. So just to get us started, we're going to talk a little bit about your caregiving journey. What got you here?
That's a real interesting question. I'm in a place right now I never dreamed of being. And I guess I would say my lived experience, being a caregiver, but not really identifying as a caregiver, mixed with my longstanding activism and advocacy. So once I began to learn what I didn't know that I didn't know as a caregiver and found out that there were other people in my situation, I decided, you know, I wanted to let other people know what I'm finding out on this journey.
Important. And if you held those leadership roles across healthcare, entrepreneurship, advocacy, you know, how has your experience of family caregiver shaped that work additionally?
Well, you know, for over 20 years, I worked at very high levels within a large healthcare system. And so I saw caregiving, I saw patient care from a system perspective. Mm. But once you get in the trenches and you begin to live it yourself, you really hear the voices of the people. You can really feel the pain. So having the combined knowledge of having been in an internal space and then, you know, being a caregiver in my own world, the combined experience has been helpful. So my role for many years was to help people navigate the system. You know, how do you get into the healthcare system and make it work? So combining that with personal experiences and the stories and voices of other people that I interact with has been really helpful.
And can you talk about that intersection of leadership? Because you have been a leader for, and still are, but can you talk about that intersection of being a leader as well as the caregiving and how that works, that intersection there?
Well, I can say that intersection, many times you can be a leader and be away from the people. You know, I remember after I retired and I started having to go for my care in the same door that the public goes in. It's a different experience. And so actually experiencing that and being open to hearing the voices of caregivers and knowing that there is a void, you know, there's just a lot of information that's out there that people don't know. And for me, being able to be a conduit to help share some of that information and also, you know, utilize some of the resources that I've been able to cultivate, you know, over my years in leadership.
So when we talk about and we kind of move through your living our legacy in leadership, you are a visionary. You know, you talked one note I wrote down and I was going to tap on it a little bit when Antonia just asked the last question around leadership. But one of the things that ties into you being a visionary in the work that you do, I was also thinking about, you mentioned the systems perspective and the work that you had done. For me, I was also thinking about with you as a visionary, how does that impact that systems change? Because you're still working systems level, although you have that personal connection and that personal influence on the work. But I was also thinking about the systems change and also thinking about it specifically with the Living Our Legacy Family Caregiving Leadership Program, you know, thinking about that as well and kind of what led you. Was it the systems change aspect that led you to develop that out?
Okay, yeah, well, that's really a good question. My background is organization development and training. So no matter what the problem is, I see the answer is some kind of training and some kind of culture change. And within Living Our Legacy, it was just a big opening there to walk in and say, you know, how do we say, change a system at the same time as changing, you know, the individuals that go through it. So from a system level, the system has a lot of information, but they don't necessarily have the access to go into the community and share this information, or do they have the acumen, you know, so being able to get through. So we look at what we're doing in terms of living our legacies. First of all, we said living our legacy because most people think about caregiving as dying, you know, in sickness. And so what we want to do is to get people to think about living. How can we live the best life for our rest of our lives? And that includes the family caregiver as well as the loved one that they're caring for. So we've developed measurable outcomes. We've trained, you know, over 100 people. And outcomes have been shown, you know, on the individual level, the family level, as well as the congregational level. So we have more people who have engaged in advanced care planning, but extending that more than just filling out the forms. There's more family conversations about it, and there's a comfort level of doing that. And what we're most proud of is that there's ministries within 37 churches that actually have integrated family caregiving into their ministry structure. So from my background and experience of organization development and being a change agent, I've been able to take that learning coupled with the lived experiences of all the family caregivers that me and my team have encountered to develop a real innovative program that moves from awareness to action.
So can you tell us a little bit about the impact that you're seeing locally in Detroit? With all of the things that you mentioned, I know that there's a major impact, and it's so interesting, Dr. Hubbard. So tell us about that.
Okay, so our impact, again, we've looked at this as an innovative approach. And I have to say, it's taken us 4 years to get to the point that we're at, because when I first started doing this, nobody wanted to talk about it. I had talked to a hospice doc friend of mine, and she says, Marilyn, you know, you're selling end of life, death, sickness, and nobody's buying it. We got to figure out how to do this. So what we did was to reframe caregiving within the churches, within the communities that we're working in. We see this as a community level change initiative, and the churches are the first community that we're in. And so for the churches, we're looking at stewardship. So we've reframed caregiving as stewardship within the ministry. We look at it as ministry leadership, as well as proactive responsibility. You know, this is not an afterthought. These are some things that we need to talk about in advance. So it's a preventative model to get people to think about and to act in ways before there's a crisis. So we hope that engagement rates will be, more impactful. We see reducing disparities in terms of the disparity between African Americans, especially as we're doing this work in Detroit, in terms of advanced care planning, you know, raising those numbers in terms of people who have actually thought about it. And also to position faith communities as trusted resources and the catalyst for long-term family caregiving preparedness.
I had one other question to go along with that, because I know that, you know, in my work as an attorney, elder law attorney, we always are talking about our documents of POAs, after death documents, our wills, trusts, things of that nature. And people have a real difficulty with those conversations. It's hard to get them on board talking about those specific issues or actually dealing with it, moving forward with getting those documents done, things of that nature. So have you found any pushback or anything that's a barrier in your work?
Well, we see ourselves as a readiness program, getting them ready to meet with you.
Okay.
So
okay.
By the time, good. By the time it's time to meet, you know, with the legal team, they've already thought this out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, we deal with the emotional part of it. And that is just so, so important. The fear.
Yeah.
You know, the idiosyncrasies. Mm-hmm. You know, many people have said, if I talk about it, it may come to pass,
yes.
And I don't want to talk about it. So that's what I have the patience to deal with and love being in that space. And so we see ourselves as a preparatory and prevention initiative. And the way the program works, we have a series of 12 modules where we have people like yourself that come in and give evidence-based information. And then what we do from our background and experience of coaching, training, we get the people to apply it. And we have a workbook called Before I Die. You know, what are the things that you need to know before you go to talk to attorneys and financial people? So we're the pre-planning. We take the fear out of it,
right.
You know, the mystique out of it.
Right.
And we hope that when they come to see you, that they're in ready, you know, to have real conversations.
After they went through the training itself, what type of follow-up do you have? What does that follow-up piece look like outside? You know, they may be referred to different places and things like that, but the modules you go through, what's the follow-up? How does that look within the churches?
Okay, well, the follow-up, what we do is train living legacy leaders. And so our living legacy leaders are trained to be role models within the churches of someone that's completed their work first, and this is self-care, and as a form of self-care. And so our first program will be a year in April that we've completed that first program. So we're going back months of April and May to see, you know, how many people actually filled out their guidebook, our workbook, and what changes need to be made, and to check with them to see what changes they would want in our program, you know, to help it to be sustainable, and how can we empower them to tell their stories in a way that could serve, you know, as a real asset to their congregations. So we do lots of surveys, lots of follow-up, lots of testimony. And the thing that's really important for us, we had 100 participants in the program, and 86% of the participants attended every session.
Wow.
And they would meet overtime, just really into this,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't come at them when they were in crisis.
Yes.
And then it was just so, it's been so good because people have such wonderful stories to share. And you know, and it's an evolution, an organic process. So as it grows and as we learn, we incorporate that into the program.
I think that's the thing I was thinking when you said that, was that these are conversations that we don't typically have, you know, and it's in an environment that allows that free will of thinking and discussion without any judgment, or without having to feel like I gotta have this done right now because X, Y, and Z is taking place. You know, I have to make this decision. You know, I'm not in a hospital with my loved one and I'm having to make a decision right now. I'm not fully aware of everything, but it's like literally it feels like you're creating a space that's just allowing them to flow, allowing them to think, allowing, you know, the congregants to really just ingest what's there without feeling any pressure, but just saying, you know what? Okay, okay, we can talk about this. I talked about it and I'm still here. My loved one is still here as well. And we're literally just able to, I'm just going to say, just lean into it.
Yeah, well, our approach is put the mask on first,
mm-hmm.
because what happened was when we first started doing this, we were just walking into crisis situations. And so we said, let's rise above this.
Yeah.
You know, so we're encouraging people to put the mask on first because, you know, many times the caregiver dies before the person that they're caring mm-hmm. for,
yep.
and there's no succession plan. And so we talk about that. We also help them talk about who might they have to care for in the future. And so by them gathering their own information, they'll be in a better position to help potential mm-hmm. people to be cared for to gather their information. And we deal with real basic stuff. Like, again, we have positioned this as a living situation in terms of if you could not speak or care for yourself, what would you want to happen in this situation? And we get down to what kind of lotion would you want somebody to put on your body?
Yes.
Right? You know, good. What kind of food would you want? And my favorite thing is I tell my son, don't put me on the eighth floor in a facility. I need to be sitting out on a deck somewhere where in a rocking chair where I can feel the sun on my body.
Yes.
So the things that we talk about are not legal or financial. They're mostly ethical.
Right? Mm-hmm.
What are the ethical things that mm-hmm. need to be considered? And then we send them to the lawyers to make that legal.
Right.
And it's a great conversation that we're having. And it's just really rewarding to me to be working with our people, and especially our people in the church and how they've taken this on.
Yeah. Those are great conversations because it's really, what are your wishes? What mm-hmm. How do you want your decision-making to carry on? And there's so many decisions that we make on a daily basis. We don't even think about it. So mm-hmm. yeah, what type of lotion is a good conversation? Because
I better have some shea butter.
Yeah, you gotta have
that. Lotion. I need that shea butter.
Some people like other things, but yeah, shea butter.
Okay.
One of the questions that I have for you, Dr. Hubbard, what are your goals? You know, what are your ultimate goals for the program? And not even just the program overall, but the participants in the program. Really want to hear, because this is a lot of good information. Mm-hmm. This is a lot of good, thick, rich information. So just wondering, what are your goals for the program?
Well, our goal for the churches, again, we let the churches set their own goals. We went in there, we couldn't be prescriptive. We could just say, this is what we think. But we're looking forward to everybody that's a member of a church to have some kind of pre-planning as it relates to what they would want in their later life. And again, we focus on living instead of dying, because most people just don't drop dead and die. They linger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
as we begin to look at, you know, the chronic diseases that people are living with. And so our goal is to spread the word, you know, to get as many people as we can knowledgeable and out of the crisis state. So mm-hmm. when we started the work, we found out that caregivers, many times when they're stressed, they call, or in crisis, they call their churches. But when they come to the church with their crisis, the church is also in crisis, trying to meet the need.
Figure it out.
Of the congregant. So what we had to do first was to go in and develop the culture of the church so people could even begin to talk about this, because this was not something that they wanted to talk about. So we've been working with church leaders, pastors, ministry leaders to even come up with, you know, sermons around this, bulletin inserts, and to make the end of life, you know, a progression that everybody talks about and that is not taboo. And so we put it, like we say, living our legacy. So we're creating our legacies every day, whether we're doing it intentionally or not. And so that's what we get people to begin to look at, you know, what do I need to start doing today to create the legacy that I want to live and leave? And what kind of changes need to be made? So we want every family to begin to have this conversation. And people that do not have families to be able to identify people within their circle that would be willing to support them.
Yeah, I love the way you say the legacy I want to live, because, you know, usually when you're thinking about legacy, you're thinking about what's left behind, but you're actually living that right now, and it's in the present. And I think that that's just a powerful way to approach the subject, where people are more willing to talk. I wanted to know too about how churches perceive these messages and trainings, and how open they are mm-hmm. to having these conversations, because I know that sometimes that's a difficulty even within our churches.
Okay, well, that has really been, I would say, the struggle as we started this, but mm-hmm. now we're just in a great place. We've developed trust. Mm-hmm. We've got a pastoral advisory team. They're open to being educated. So what we learned from the very beginning, awareness was so important. They didn't know, you know, what the caregiving future looked like. You know, once you talk about what it's going to look like in 2030, 2050, yeah, they had no idea. And then, you know, the church attendance is primarily older adults. And so when we could get them through our background and experience to begin to look at how this aligns with what they're trying to do in their churches. So putting together the whole alignment and then helping them to develop the culture within the church. So we had to look at, is this even feasible? Is this something you really want to do? And so it took us several months, you know, to get people up to that, but it's a trust situation. And then we have the testimonies from people within the churches, and we've got so much capacity in the churches, because some things you don't know about caregiving unless you've lived that. And so, and once you've gone through it, you're now in a capacity to share your experience with others. So what we're doing is helping people to shape their stories, you know, from that whole victim mentality to an empowering mentality. Mm-hmm. So we see this growing and shaping and developing cultures that did not exist before, where people are beginning to talk about this and normalize the conversation.
How do you see this transitioning to other systems of faith? What do you see, how do you see about the, you know, replicating the program itself?
Oh, sure. Right now, we're with Christian faith. And so it's very scalable, okay? Mm-hmm. Not only to other faiths, but other communities. And so what they do is to bring, we bring the process and they bring the content. And so it's very portable. They put in their own values. They put in their own goals and objectives. And we just, you know, monitor the process. So mm-hmm. it's very scalable.
One last thing for me was just thinking about how we're going into this tsunami, so to speak, of how, you know, older adults, I believe there's a lot of statistics on it, but we're just aging very quickly in the next few years in Michigan overall. So how do you get young people on board with these conversations as well? Because they're going to be the next ones, you know, going into that caregiving situation. They may be in it now, but they're going to be going into that or being people that need to be cared for. So how do you get them on board now, especially social media, things like that, that captivate them? They have to be maybe talked to in different ways. So what do you see as that conversation?
Oh, yeah. Our program is intergenerational.
Okay, even perfect.
Even our team is intergenerational. And, you know, and again, I look at my own grandson who has a great-grandmother living, and he goes over to help his grandmother give his great-grandmother a bath. So that's caregiving, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I've had to bring that to his attention. Yeah. So the readiness is there.
Okay.
And so once the message has been crafted, and that's what we're really excited about, we have crafted messages that resonate with people, and it looks positive instead of negative. It looks like something, you know, that you want to walk into and you want to be prepared for. And so, you know, we're living this aging in real time. And so what we found out was that we couldn't talk about caregiving without talking about aging. And so there were a lot of things that we had to talk about before we could even get to the conversation of family caregiving.
Right.
Because there's, you got to talk about age, you got to talk about disability, you got to talk about serious illness, you got to talk about grief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's all within a package that we put together, and it incorporates the whole family structure and messages for each segment of the family.
Yeah, I love that. I love the intergenerational piece of that. That's really powerful.
And that's going to keep it going.
Yeah.
You know, because we often just stop and think of just where we're at. But I know the more conversations are growing around the importance of making sure that we have a spectrum of individuals involved, mm-hmm. not just the older individuals or the middle age, but caregiving, the example you just gave, caregiving starts so young. Mm-hmm. We just don't label it.
Right. Exactly. And we're labeling it as an act of love,
act
of stewardship, mm-hmm. an act of ministry. And that that's the DNA within the mm-hmm. churches.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what denomination you're in, you know, there's acts of love, acts of caring. And so we let them align it with their doctrine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's important for that replication. That's going to be amazing when it replicates on through. That's amazing.
Well, this has been a really rich and powerful conversation, and I'm excited about your work, Dr. Hubbard. And I just want to invite you to say anything else. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about in terms of the program or any resource you want to mention before we close today?
Yeah. Well, what I would say, I would just encourage everybody to understand that caregiving is where life is. It's not if, it's when.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that have been through caregiving situations, being open to sharing their experiences. And what we're finding is that a lot of widows, you know, who have taken care of husbands who are now deceased or wives that are deceased, they have some rich stories because they tell themselves, I went through that with them. I don't want anybody going through this with me. And so looking for a way to tell our stories, to get involved, and to really make this, you know, a community initiative, and know that we're all in this together and that this is a part of self-care.
Okay, well, I want to send out a thank you to everyone listening to Caregiver Conversations. We hope today's conversation gave you a new perspective and encouragement.
If you'd like to learn more about Caregiver Conversations or connect with the SRC, you can visit us at semisrc.org, or you can email us at info@miseniors.org, or just give us a call, 888-341-8593.
And to learn more about Neighborhood Legal Services Michigan Elder Law and Advocacy Center, please visit www.nlsmichigan.org or call 313-937-8291. Thank you again for tuning in.
Be sure to subscribe, share this episode, and explore our past episodes for more conversations just like this. Until next time, take care and keep caring.